Greetings and a happy new year to all. Well, almost. Can y'all believe I still haven't sent out our holiday letter? And here I am with 2 hours and 22 minutes to go to get it written. So I have locked myself in the laundry room with my laptop, a bottle of Andre, pulled up a bar stool from my kitchen for a makeshift writing desk on top of our dryer. Since it's coming up on midnight, I think I probably should just bag the whole holiday letter for now. I mean, who am I kidding? Instead, maybe I should post a list of New Year's resolutions which provide a glimpse into the chaos and joy, mostly chaos, of 2015. So here are a few things the Bransons are resolved to do in the coming year because of what didn't go so good in the last one behind us. Number one. I will not let my mother-in-law get to me when she criticizes our computers and cell phones. The fact that she does not own a computer or cell phone is not my problem. Her avocado green rotary dial phone she purchased with 20 books of green stamps in 1969 is just fine. Two, I'm gonna be sweeter in general to everyone. So I'll have to stop driving on Beach Boulevard between 7 and 9 a.m. on weekdays. Also, I will have to curtail my use of the micro-sized parking lot at the Riverside Publix, where I have been known to cuss like a sailor. Apologies from everyone that might be here from Mayport or NAS Jax. Now, this next one is a ginormous challenge. We've got to keep a better watch on the little one, Darnell Jr. That five-year-old is something else with his iPhone. Last year, we had a huge shopping bill from Amazon Prime, several three-hour sessions with a psychic named Miss Serafina, a complete hand-painted set of Star Wars figurines from Franklin Mint. Number four, more exercise from me and Darnell. Well, I don't know why I say more, actually. I will encourage, this is number five, everyone in the family to eat less of less. Confused? Hear me out on this one. The times when we do cheat on eating only healthy foods, and everybody does, then exercise restraint. Just have one sweet pea caramel or two. Just have one handful of Peter Brook's chocolate popcorn instead of the whole bag. See what I mean? Number six, I will stop buying cookies in bulk at Costco. Number seven, I will stop buying chips in bulk at Costco. Number eight, I will stop buying stuff I don't need, but it ends up in my cart at Costco. Number nine, I will return the stuff that I don't need from Costco instead of hiding it in the garage where Darnell always finds it anyway and brings it up in the middle of a fight.
Why the hell do we need these things for? What are you trying to do with 10 brightly colored combination locks in the shape of carabiners?
I feel it is important to end on a positive note. So I pledge that once a week I will gather the whole family in the car and drive to Riverwalk or Memorial Park or the beach, anywhere beautiful near the water, and walk around for a while. And 13, my final one. And I'm going to start saying, I love you to more people who matter in my life, even if every time I say it, it gets a little less enthusiastic of a response. I love you too, or Darnell Jr.'s favorite retort, Mom, are you okay? Hey, y'all, you have a safe and wonderful new year. And if you see me cussing at the parking lot at Publix, just pay me no mind.
You've tuned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homemade mixture of music and phraseology from the greater South. We're broadcasting live today from the Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville, a place many of us call home. Today on the show, we'll hear stories from writer Ann Hyman, Derek Cochran, and Donald Chang. Take a stroll Park of Bygone Days with Dr. Wayne Wood. Music writer Eric Serrett fondly recounts the landing of the Fab Four, and Mariah Salvat from Southern Roots Filling Station will help cook up some luck for the new year. And plenty of laughs from the retreads, and our special musical guest, Complicated Animals, and the Parker Urban Band. So put your black-eyed peas in a pot to soak. Pour yourself a festive beverage and settle in.
Good evening, Jacksonville! And a very happy new year to all of you Omean mayors.
And I'm Tiffany Melanson, and I can already tell you're one hell of an audience.
Oh, yeah! We can't think of a better way to spend New Year's than with all of you. Thanks so much for coming out tonight. So let's get this party started!
Home for Christmas in 1959 on the train from Jacksonville to Bradenton. I came back on a bleak, cold, sunless afternoon. The sky and the air and the clouds were the same pale, tarnished shade of silver gray. I stood in the space at the end of the car as we rolled in the outskirts of Jacksonville, leaning my forehead on the cold glass at the top of the door, looking at the city. The trees were bare. A fitful wind tugged smoke from the chimneys of small, shabby houses, and I loved the look of it. It looked like a real city with a tough side. The wheels groaned and squealed against the steel rail as we backed into the station. A few drops of rain slid down the grimy glass. Raw cold oozed into the car like the odor of the pulp mills that hung over the north side when the wind was right or wrong, or no matter what the wind did. I marked in my mind that I was almost home. When had the transfer of roots from one soil to another taken place? I had not known it had happened until I came back to Jacksonville that December afternoon and thought, I'm home. I saw Henry, a new friend and neighbor, not yet a lover, although the thought had crossed my mind, waiting for me on the platform. The platform was darkening and noisy, the clash of big ironclad wheels of the tall baggage carts against the rough concrete, and steam leaked under the cars. We learn the plot long before we recognize the players. There are spaces inside our heads, our hearts, our imaginations that we spend our lives trying to fill. Stories we keep trying to finish. The collar of Henry's trench coat was turned up. The brim of his hat pulled down. He had a cigarette. He was grinning at me. Here's looking at you, kid. Thank you.
That was our very own Harolyn Sharp performing a piece by Ann Hyman. In case you've been living under a rock in this city, there's a major restaurant renaissance. When you think about all the choices we have around town, the new cafes, the food trucks, the eateries springing up every week, it's pretty exciting. Swamp Radio has fallen head over heels for a charming place in the King Street area of Riverside called Southern Roots Filling Station. Please welcome owner Maria Salvat to the show to discuss some New Year's food traditions with Ian.
Ladies and gentlemen, Maria Salvat. So we have some Southern Roots fans in the audience.
You.
I should also mention their beautiful four-week-old baby is backstage making no noise.
Thankfully. Yeah.
So, Mariah, you started out at a farmer's market in Neptune Beach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 4 years ago.
And what were you making?
Started out making dips and spreads, baked goods, kind of whatever the season inspired.
And then that kind of developed into a business where you actually delivered food to people's homes.
Yeah, so people seemed to respond well to what I was making and wanted a little bit more. So I would send out a weekly menu and people would order and I would deliver the food.
I should mention that your restaurant is vegetarian.
Yes.
And organic.
Yes.
And when I think of those two things, I think of no flavor. Until I ate there. And there was so much spice in everything, you know, and it really blew my mind. And one of the things, you and I just did a talk show appearance, and you brought this huge tray of this amazingly delicious cornbread, which is a base you use on the weekends. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so on the weekends, we make cornbread, and then we also have a bean dish topped with veggies and a yummy sauce. And my favorite way to have that is on top of the cornbread.
Right, and that beans and rice dish is offered on a sliding scale, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so food is near and dear to my heart, so we want everyone to have access to healthy, affordable food.
So when's the last time you heard of a restaurant with a sliding scale? I mean, this is really kind of amazing.
Thank you.
So it's New Year's Eve, and tomorrow, you know, I'm thinking about eating greens and black-eyed peas, and those things are usually flavored with pork. when I grew up here, obviously they're not going to be flavored with pork at your house. What do you put in your greens?
So collard greens, I think, have a wonderful flavor, especially if you get them fresh and local. So I like to just keep it simple with olive oil, apple cider vinegar, and salt. And then for the black-eyed peas, same base of the olive oil, apple cider vinegar, and salt. But then things like Spanish paprika, which have a lovely smoky flavor. Turmeric, cumin, coriander, onion, garlic. Really brings out the flavor.
Great. And you guys have this charming space very close to Park and King, which you kind of stumbled on, right? You guys are walking the dog.
Yes. Yep. Very serendipitous. It was a spot that I kind of coveted, but had a tenant in there. And we were walking the dog one night and I wanted to show my husband the spot. And sure enough, it was vacant. So we went next door to Beer 30 and asked for the landlord's phone number, called her. And within the week, really, we had signed a lease on the space.
And you guys have this very groovy space. It's kind of part restaurant, you know, a little mart. It's amazing. I totally encourage you guys to check it out. You're closed because you're thoughtful and want your employees to have tomorrow off, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But when do you open again?
We open again on Saturday.
All right, so Saturday, check it out. We have some flyers in the lobby. Ladies and gentlemen, Maria Salvat.
Our first musical guest made quite a splash at this year's TEDx event. They are sultry, laid back, and delightful. Ladies and gentlemen, Complicated Animals.
You won't believe. Point and cry. If open eyes can see, I really wanted something more from you. But in the bigger picture, I haven't got a clue. We drive around in cars, we go to jobs and bars, we go home to our loves, we think heaven's above. What's the point in taking all that you got? Point mine and be a bigger man. I tried as hard to reach your size, but we could never see eye to eye. We drive around in cars, we go to jobs and bars, we go to our loves, we think heaven's above. But sometimes we can surprise even ourselves. We drive around in cars, we go to jobs and bars, we come to our loves, we think of us above. We drive around in cars, we go to jobs and bars, we come to our loves, we think of us above.
Thank you, guys.
If you push me away, I might just go with it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll relive it over again. If you push me away, you might just regret it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll forget it all again. Over again. We can't go on this way. Talk of war, well that's a game we shouldn't play. Feelings, they come from every corner. Feelings, they come from just one place. If you push me away, I might just go with it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll relive it over again. Over again. If you push me away, you might just regret it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll forget it over again. Over again. Oi, hi, well, so much say. So silent treatment, well that's a game we shouldn't play. Love comes, it comes from every corner. When love comes, it comes from just one place. If you push me away, I might just go with it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll relive it over again. Over again. If you push me away, you might just regret it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll forget it over again. Over again. Será que eu vou gostar? If you push me away, I might just go with it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll relive it over again. Over again. If you push me away, you might just regret it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll forget it over again. Over again. If you push me away, I might just go with it. Maybe you won't try to stay. I'll relive it over again. Over again.
just regret it. Maybe I'll just stay and forget it ever again.
Over again.
Thank you guys so much. I want to thank you and wish you guys a happy new year tonight.
Complicated animals. They are so good, right? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Donald Chang.
Hi, everyone. Happy New Year's Eve. Everyone got the resolutions ready? Why bother? You're going to forget them by February, just like 2015. When Ian asked me to do a piece for Swamp Radio, the New Year's Eve special, I was honored. When he said, "Why don't you talk about the Chinese New Year?" I was a bit more tentative. I said, "Ian, I don't know much about Chinese New Year." And he said, "Don't worry, just talk about what it means to you. And make it 5 minutes long." Okay, fine. Every Chinese New Year since I was 4, I woke up bright and early every morning. I wiped the sleep out of my little eyes, and I ran down the stairs to check if the New Year's dragon had visited our home in the night. Some years, if we were lucky, he'd leave woks full of firecrackers that symbolized the raging fire in his belly. Or if we were luckier, envelopes full of cash, symbolizing the fortune he protected in his cave. When everyone else in the house woke up, we'd gather together and eat a meal of dumplings, which represented his eyes. By eating them, we hoped to gain his foresight for the new year. Then, after the plates were cleared, we'd gather our most cherished belongings and set fire to them to represent the destruction that was wrought by the dragon, and begin our new year fresh with a clean slate. I'm not Chinese. And I've never been Chinese. And I'm not close enough to my Chinese friends to celebrate New Year's with them a la tradition. So I don't know anything about Chinese New Year's. I guess I could have done my research and then told you guys about that. But then that would basically mean my 5 minutes would be vomiting Google all over you guys. And honestly, that's gross, right? It's not as gross as real vomit, but it's pretty gross. So I just made all that up. I lied. I made up a whole bunch of garbage because who would know? Ian's no expert. It's not like he was going to stop me and say, "Hey, now, that's complete garbage that you pulled out of the air." I could have also probably have just told him, "Ian, I'm not Chinese. I'll just do something else." But where's the fun in that? It's not every day that you get to make your old high school teacher look like an idiot in front of an audience. I'm Korean-American. Ian, I'm Korean-American. That's spelled K-O-R-E-A-N. But my family's Korean, but I was born and raised in America, so I'm American. My whole generation, though, my cousins and my brother, we barely speak Korean. We don't keep up with Korean news. We don't date Koreans. Heck, my cousin is converting to Judaism so she can be with her boyfriend. It's difficult to keep up with two cultures. There are two distinct mindsets, two value systems. And so, in the end, I'm in the middle of this tug of war, and honestly, the Korean side is losing. I don't have the language. I don't have many Korean friends. I mean, I was writing this piece for the last week, and it got me very depressed because I was like, how do I feel about this Korean culture? Do I actually value it? I mean, I'm shedding this Korean identity. Would my kids or my kids' kids remember their Korean roots? Yes. You know why? Korean food is so damn good. Thank you. I know what you're thinking. Food, Donald, you pig, where's your heart at? What about family? Food is how I connect to my family. It's how I connect to my culture. My earliest memories are of my grandmother in the kitchen over a pot of hot oil. She's making Korean double fried chicken. It's the best thing in the world. Or my mom crafting dozens of kimchi mandu, these spicy cabbage dumplings. She's using a recipe handed down, thank you, handed down to her from her mother, who got it from her mother before her. You know, my limited Korean vocabulary I talked about, 90% food. Kalbi, kalbichim, mandukuk, takkuk, panchan, everything I know is food. My family has very few traditions. I mean, every year, each holiday is a disorganized last-minute mess where we try to figure out whose house we're getting at, what time, who's bringing who, but we always have the same foods. Because if we change that up, it would be sacrilege. I mean, New Year is coming up. Every New Year, it's got to be takkuk. That's a rice cake and beef soup that is simmered until it's almost as thick as gravy. And these rice cakes are cut into these little coin shapes to represent coins, to represent good fortune in the new year. I'm not making that stuff up. That's real. And my mom, she makes the kimchi mandu, like dozens of them, mountains of them, that we eat for the next week. And when I bite into them, and I get that mixture of sour and spicy taste in my mouth, I know that my kids will know this. I may not be able to teach them the Korean alphabet, but I will teach them how to use overripe kimchi to make a stir fry, how to pour in water to make that last bit of crisp rice at the bottom of the hot pot just taste so good. They may not be able to speak Korean, but my kids will know how to eat like they're Korean. And that's my resolution.
Hemming Park has recently had quite a wonderful makeover. There are places to eat, drink, take your kids, hang out. In January, the park will be celebrating its 150th anniversary, and we thought we should get some intel on the place from our history champion, Dr. Wayne Wood, and Damian Robinson, both from the Friends of Hemming Park. Take it away, gentlemen.
It is great to be here tonight. Wayne, why don't you start telling us a little bit about the history of Hemming Park?
Well, okay. Just about two blocks from the Majestic Florida Theater, at approximately the corner of Forsyth and Liberty Streets, in ancient times there was a Native American village known as Osakite. And it was located near the narrowest point of the river, which made it a great ideal spot for crossing humans as well as livestock. The natives called it Waka Palatka, which was loosely translated as place of the cows crossing. Later, in the 1700s, the British renamed it the Cow Ford and built a 100-mile-long road from Georgia to St. Augustine, known as the King's Road, which crossed the river right here. Isaiah D. Hart, a cattle rustler from Georgia, traveled down the King's Road and settled here in 1821, just about the time that Florida became part of the United States. Hart traded some of his purloined cattle for 18 acres of unkempt real estate, and he built a log cabin just about 150 feet from where I'm standing right now. Hart is considered the founder of Jacksonville because it was he who proposed laying out a town at the Cow Ford, and that was the first real estate development in Florida. Hart specified that block number 39 would be designated as a public square. On January the 23rd, 1866, which was 5 years after Hart's death, and exactly 150 years ago now, the park was sold to the city by Hart's heirs for $10 in cash. During the tourist boom in the 1870s and 1880s, two of Jacksonville's largest hotels, the Windsor and the St. James, overlooked the public square. It was originally known as City Park and later as St. James Park. The St. James Hotel was famous throughout the South, and its guest book included the names of the Astors and the Vanderbilts and the royalty of Europe. However, by the end of the 1880s, a newspaper described the park as overgrown with weeds, habituated by stray pigs and cows, and a gathering place for bunco men and prostitutes. Another newspaper suggested turning the ill-maintained park into a cemetery so there would at least be a few stately monuments and maybe some sorrowing relatives would plant flowers there. The Great Fire of 1901 destroyed all of the trees in the park. Nearly half a century later, the huge oaks had regrown, but the city then chopped them down again to get rid of birds. Hundreds of thousands of starlings were roosting in the trees, making it unsafe for anyone to walk or sit under them. Then, in 1978, all of the grass was removed and the park was redesigned as a paved plaza. Damien, why don't you tell us a little bit about the park today?
Well, 35 years ago, when the park was turned into a plaza, it became a large, cold expanse of concrete that had very little vibrancy. Trash, unkempt landscaping, and loitering homeless people gave over to the park, and it kind of gave the park an unsavory image. Exasperated with the state of the park and realizing that Hemming Park's problems must be resolved in order for downtown to be revitalized, in 2013, city government leaders requested an outside group to manage the park. A nonprofit group named Friends of Hemming Park was formed to answer this request.
And you were part of that, right?
I'm very proud to be a part of that team. And we've created a remarkable turnaround in the park. Thank you. Thank you. Friends of Hemming Park has been in operation now for a little over a year.
And what do visitors see in the park when they go there today?
Well, Hemming Park has become a showcase for art, entertainment, and food. We provide daily maintenance, cleanliness, and safety 7 days a week from dusk to dawn. We have activities and programming every day, including concerts, festivals, street performers, gatherings, and a hundred of other activities that invite families and downtown workers into the park. We have a full-time social worker to help jobless and homeless persons find housing, employment, and other social services. And we've done landscaping. There has been an open-air cafe and live music every weekday.
So, Damien, tell us what's next for Hemming Park.
Glad you asked. Within the next few months, we'll be opening the Black Sheep Cafe, a permanent restaurant in Hemming Park. Also in 2016, we're going to be constructing a major music and performance stage in the park. Friends of Hemming Park is a remarkable urban experiment to show that with creativity, leadership, vision, and the support of our community, this park can once again become the crown jewel of our revitalized downtown. Thank you.
If you got here a little early, you were able to hear our next musical guest play. Ladies and gentlemen, the Parker Urban Band.
Dance like a butterfly, wild and free.
Wild and free.
The When the sun is shining on a cloudy day, everything will be okay. Double rainbows, halos in the sky, everything will be okay. When the sun is shining on a cloudy day, everything will be okay.
This year we had our first open call to get stories from our community, and writer Eric Serrett had this amazing story to share with us.
Here's our very own Bill Ratliff to tell it.
September 11th, 1964. The power was off in Jacksonville, but there was electricity in the air. Four young lads from Liverpool were about to make their only Florida appearance despite Hurricane Dora's visit the previous day. Although brief, clocking in at around 30 minutes, the Beatles' Gator Bowl debut would inspire a whole generation of musicians and promoters, including local legend Lynyrd Skynyrd. But for Springing the Blues founder Sam Veal, it would lead to a particularly hairy generational clash of rock and roll rebellion. On September 10th, Dora knocked out the power, closed roads, and diverted a plane carrying four long-haired British lads to Key West. Not to be deterred, they drove north and took the stage, the lingering winds forcing Ringo to nail his drum set down. It was the winds of segregation, however, that threatened to keep the band from taking the stage until local promoters agreed to integrate the stadium, the beginning of the end for the local Jim Crow music era. Jacksonville had long been a regular stop on the Chitlin Circuit, a nickname given to the parade of acceptable jazz, big band, blues, and later soul performers that toured the Jim Crow South. Veal recalls his parents attending concerts at the Roosevelt Hotel downtown featuring Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey, and other big band giants, and he himself would visit the old dance hall on the pier where on Friday nights there'd either be fights or there'd be dances. There was also a string of honky-tonks that spread down First Street at the beach before the Baptist took over. When rock and roll fever swept the country, however, Jacksonville made the national spotlight in an early battle of the coming cultural war. In 1956, Elvis Presley performed one of his first indoor headline performances right here in the Florida Theater. Jacksonville made Life magazine after juvenile court judge Marion Gooding chaperoned the performance to ensure that Elvis's hips didn't corrupt local youth. Local leaders managed to restrain Elvis's hips and keep the lid on local rebellion for a little while longer. But by the time the crashing chords of a hard day's night capped off that brief but fateful performance, Jacksonville was transformed into Music Town. After the show, local guitarist Rick Doeschler recalls his father requesting aspirin. "That's the worst thing I've ever been to in my life." But for Rick and his friends, everything changed. Everyone at that point had to get a guitar, local pianist Mike Hollingsworth recalls. That show created a culture in town where everyone wanted to play music. Suddenly at parties, instead of playing records, everyone bought their gear. My brother had a garage apartment, and everyone would bring up guitars, and I'd go and listen to them play. They'd literally play all night. But the Beatles changed more than just music. After that, everyone combed their hair straight down and wanted to get pointy-toed boots, Veal says. In an act of rock and roll rebellion, Veal grew his hair out, and a spanking by his stern southern mother wasn't enough to deter his new fashion sensibility. Finally, declaring he looked like a sissy, she marched him to the barber. Sam was furious and heartbroken as his newfound locks cascaded to the floor. But that wasn't the end for this determined rebel. No joke, I scooped my hair up off the floor, took it home, and taped it to my head. Soon the Beach Boys followed, and then the Rolling Stones visited in 1965, and the city exploded with musical diversity. By the turn of the decade, the town would give birth to so-called Southern rock, with Lynyrd Skynyrd growing up here and the Allman Brothers gelling in a Jack's Beach hotel. But without that fateful appearance by four long-haired Liverpoolians, Jacksonville may never have grown into the birthplace of Southern rock. And perhaps the first rock and roll toupee. Thank you.
This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT, your public radio station. On this, the last day of 2015, we take a look at the stories that shaped North Florida. And now, here's your host, Relissa Moss.
Good evening, and live from Studio 5, I'm Relissa Moss, welcoming you to this special year-in-review media roundtable. Normally, we are joined by some of Jacksonville's media experts, but because it's New Year's Eve and most people have bosses who actually give them this night off, we'll get to hear from Carl, our station's intern.
Hello.
As well as Thelma.
Oh, what a pleasure it is to be here.
Thelma volunteered to be a part of this show because she had nothing else to do tonight. She also has 8 cats.
I sure do. Their names are Muffin and Scrumptious and Cantaloupe.
Thank you, Thelma. We'll cover the biggest stories of 2015, and as always, we'll take calls from our listeners. Let's discuss the resolution of Jacksonville's water taxi problems. In 2014, the city of Jacksonville was unable to reach an agreement with Jacksonville Water Taxi, who provided shuttle service to Everbank Field and other venues. Let's hear some thoughts from Pete in Riverside. Pete, did you have some thoughts you wanted to share on the water taxi resolution?
I need a taxi. I'm drinking. Drinking.
Pete, you need to call a regular taxi for that. Let's go to our next caller. We have Sarah in Pontevedra.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say that I am happy that the water taxi is back in service. Our city needs to make an effort to strengthen our downtown, and water taxi plays an important role in that initiative.
Wow, that's refreshing, a real call.
I would also like to suggest that during the water taxi ride, we have Lenny Curry wear a thong while dancing in a kiddie pool filled with Jell-O.
Oh, well, there's the crazy. I just didn't give it enough time. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Again, I think it would probably be best to move on to our next topic. I'd like to discuss the pension fund story that broke earlier this year. A scathing investigative report accused the city of Jacksonville's police and fire pension fund of mismanaging the fund. On the line now, we have Jeff from the West Side. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I really enjoy pension fund.
Pension funds?
Yeah, you know, I just think everybody should be pensioned for fun, not the police and the firemen. I mean, going up to a girl at a bar and pinching her honey is a great icebreaker.
Jeff, I'm going to stop you. I think you are confused.
For me, mismanagement of pension fund is just not doing it enough. Heck, I pinch pretty much everybody I meet. I mean, I got a couple of restraining orders out of it, but I've also made some really great friends by pinching people. Thanks for taking my call and addressing this very important topic. Bye-bye now.
I'm speechless. Well, it's time now for our pledge drive. Folks, we can't run this station without your help, so we're going to spend the next hour and a half talking about how important your charity contributions are. Our goal is to raise $30,000. Wow. Look at that. We already have a caller on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Shad Khan. I'm donating the full amount, $30,000, but only if you promise not to spend the next hour and a half talking about the pledge drive.
I promise. Thanks for that donation, Shad Khan. Well, folks, since we hit our goal, I guess we can wrap things up a little early. I'm going to get a drink. Happy New Year, everyone.
Here's a lovely poem by Douglas Anderson's Dwight James III, read by our own Tiffany Melanson.
Stovetop roots. The first thing I ever learned to cook was eggs and rice. When I was two or three, my great-grandmother cooked it for me. She called it her southern delicacy. So good, I was ready for thirds after the first plate. From that moment on, I knew whenever she graced the stove, whipped her pot and spoon the way no woman ever had, even with the humblest of ingredients, she could create magic. But with age, she put down her apron, and it became my turn to pick it up. I learned to cook for my siblings, and as I stirred the steaming pot of mush, it was suddenly unappealing. I began to wonder, why do we eat this southern disaster? When did we decide to accept these leftover scraps from the master? I wondered why we're stuck in this pattern of worshiping our ancestors' leftovers, why we hold on to traditions knowing they're just reminders of strife, of hunger, of pain, of opportunities our people will never obtain. I guess three generations of grandchildren made my great-grandmother's pain more bearable. Maybe having us around made time and the past somehow stop for her so it could begin again for us. As I sit with my great-grandmother near the end of her days, I look at her golden egg roll smile, the magic she used to make on the stovetop, replaced by the gray thunderstorm of her hair. These days, I don't make eggs and rice, not because of its origins or its past, but because I'll never make it quite like her. Thank you.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot, old anxiety? For old anxiety, my dear, old anxiety, we'll raise a toast and take a cup of old anxiety. And surely you'll buy your pint cup, and surely I'll buy mine. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for old lang syne. For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll raise a cup and earnest it.
Have run about the slopes and picked the daisies fine, but we've wandered many weary foot since old lang syne.
For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll raise a cup of
for joining us tonight. Round of applause for the Florida Theater staff, Mima Saislin, Kevin Stone, Catherine Wills, where are you?
Thanks for spending your New Year's with us in the swamp, and look for this broadcast on 89.9 in January.
Happy New Year, everybody!
Thanks for listening. Our associate producer is Hurley Winkler. Our stage manager is Laurel Wilson. Our sound engineer is Mr. Don Ringhofer of Stay Tuned Studios. Join us in 2016 for more laughs and stories, Swamp Radio style.